Hello, and welcome back to another installment of EP Architalk, the official podcast of AIA New York State Emerging Professionals. As a reminder, if you like what you hear, please hit subscribe wherever you get your podcast and leave us a review. Today, we have Sarah Bruce, AIA, who will be talking to us about her alternate career path in architecture and her journey of becoming the executive director of the Syracuse Habitat for Humanity. Since it's National Volunteer Month, we'll be speaking with Sarah about her new role and her career in other volunteer positions. Sarah is also a past president of AIA Central New York Chapter and serves on the chapter's board of directors. She also serves on the board of directors of AIA New York State, served on the Honor Awards Task Force Committee, and currently sits on the AIA New York State Budget and Finance Committee. Thank you so much for joining us today, Sarah. It's a pleasure to speak with you about your alternate path in architecture.
Thanks so much, Talisha. I'm very grateful that you've had me on today.
All right. So why don't we just get started in learning a little bit more about you? Did you grow up in New York State? Did you grow up someplace else? How did you get into architecture in the first place?
Absolutely. I actually grew up in a small rural town in Pennsylvania, just south of Binghamton, New York. So I've been close to New York State all my life, but I usually tell people I grew up somewhere between Binghamton and Scranton and between the office or being in New York State. Most people will somewhat know where that is. I went to a small high school, graduated with a class of 90 students, and applied early decision to Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute. I knew by my junior year, I really wanted to go to school for architecture. And I really felt that I would be able to use that career to help people somehow. And I don't think I really had a feel for what that meant as a junior in high school, but I knew that the built environment had a lot of potential to be able to help people and impact the way we live our lives. And I think I saw that opportunity and decided to go into architecture.
And that's pretty interesting. I mean, a lot of people go through high school and still don't know what they want to become. How did you get to knowing about what architecture is in the first place? Do you have one of your parents who were architects or in the architectural community?
I actually do not. And to be completely honest, I don't remember what exactly drew me to say I want to be an architect. I know I liked math and I also liked science. And so there was this idea in my head that this would be a good way to mix the two by becoming an architect. Thankfully, I found out, at least in the way I've done architecture, I haven't needed a lot of that math in my recent history. So I was able to get away from that a little bit. But no one in my immediate family is in the architecture profession. But I think through exposure of, I'm not even sure what, but I knew that that was the field I wanted to get into. And my dad did do some construction when I was little. So I think maybe just from the side of things, he is a very handy person. And so I always saw him fixing things or putting things together. And I think maybe that led me a little bit to wanting to understand what happens before it gets there.
It probably seeped in. And who knows, maybe there were some teachers at school who might have encouraged you along the way as well. Sometimes it's funny how we don't remember, you know, what really sparked the idea. We just remember having the idea from a certain age.
Mm-hmm.
And so did you say RPI, Rensselaer?
Yes.
I have trouble saying the name, so forgive me. Rensselaer Polytechnic, right?
Yes. RPI, Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute.
And how did you find your career there?
I really liked it. I mean, architecture school was an incredibly difficult time. I reconsidered my options multiple times throughout those 5 years, but in the end, I'm very, very grateful I stuck it out. I met some of the most amazing friends there. I actually met my husband in my same architecture class, and we've been together since. So I certainly can't say I wish I had done anything differently, because it wouldn't have brought me to where I am today in any aspect of my life. But Rensselaer has a beautiful campus. I made friends with some non-architecture students so that I had a little bit of a life outside of the green building. and really had some great professors and great students alongside me throughout those 5 years.
Yeah, I can imagine that for meeting your husband alone.
Exactly.
So you said that you might have rethought studying architecture along the way while you were in college. What were some of the things that you may have thought that you would have gone into if you didn't stick with the architecture program?
My minor at Rensselaer was in electronic arts. So I was, which was really their version of graphic design or marketing. And I really enjoyed those classes. I felt like I could spend what I considered a reasonable amount of time on them and still be happy with the outcome, as opposed to working all night long on a project in studio and still not being happy with the outcome the next day. I'm not sure I really ever figured out what else I would do. It was just more a matter of, do I feel I can actually succeed at this? Is this where I want to go? And maybe that was the start of putting me on an alternate career path, that I wasn't going to go down the road of being a traditional architect, but those thoughts during college might be what started the process in getting me to where I am today.
And did you ever volunteer? Did you start your volunteerism or your volunteering, whichever way it goes, back in college? Were you a big volunteer on the campus or outside of the campus?
I was part of the AIAS in college, and I was actually the co-president of that 1 year of college. So I think I got my start into that then. I never really considered myself having a lot of volunteer experience before that because I wasn't out volunteering for community organizations. But looking back, I did volunteer a lot of my time when I was in high school. I helped stage manage middle school musicals. So I gave up a lot of my afternoons after school helping to coach and work with middle schoolers on their musical theater production. So I would say I probably really started volunteering my time then, and it's been a very important part of my life ever since.
And you said that your minor was in electronic arts, which is an equivalent of graphic design, but I imagine using computers mainly?
Yes. So it was a lot of computers or digital photography, a little bit of video, which was honestly never my strong suit, but I have always enjoyed photography just as a hobby, not really as anything more than that. But I learned a lot of graphic design techniques, probably added to my strong desire to make everything that goes out from any of my jobs not just be correct technically, but it also needs to look pretty in my mind. So that, I think, was a big part of that electronic arts minor, was giving me the confidence and the skills and some of that graphic design background.
But, you know, it's very interesting because you said that you felt like you were really strong in math and science in high school. And maybe that's what led you towards architecture, part at least of what led you towards architecture. But how did you even get into the electronic arts graphic design program? How did you think, I think this is what I want to do? Maybe you did have also a liking of art while you were in high school, or?
I did. I think less so kind of physical art, but as I mentioned, I was involved in musical theater. I also did take a lot of technical drawing or CAD classes at the time in high school, not related to building even, but just the technical drawing pieces. And I did have a great art teacher my senior year, who worked with me on some pieces to be able to put together, I guess my junior year, to put together my portfolio to apply to college. And I think that creative side was always more my outlet. So I was thought of myself as strong in math and science in school, but then I had that creative outlet on the side. And so once I got to college, I didn't have a set minor when I got there, but from the different elective classes that I was able to take, I picked a couple that sounded interesting to me and realized that they all fell under that electronic arts minor. So since I had a certain number of elective courses to fill up anyways, I thought there was no point in not pursuing a minor there. My husband decided to go for business for his minor, and given where the chair I'm sitting in now, maybe that would have been a better idea. But I think that creative side of that funnily enough, schematic design and architecture was never really my strong suit, that side of the creative process. But the more graphic, creative side is just something I've always enjoyed doing.
Yeah, I agree. I was going to say that many people at my school as well, the majority of people, I would say, minored in business. And as many architects nowadays will say that it's important to minor in business. And I, much like you, did not minor. I guess we both sort of took an alternative path early on. You know, so I think that that's great that you studied electronic arts, you know, and sort of went with that creative side rather than going with that technical side. Now, why should we judge by the chair that maybe you should have gone into business?
I think being the executive director now of a nonprofit organization, having worked for the organization previously, I understood the mission, I understand the vision, and love the work that we do at Habitat. But until I sat in this executive director's chair, it was a little bit beyond me how much of a business and honestly how many types of businesses fall under the umbrella of the nonprofit at Syracuse Habitat. And so now I went from project architect managing projects to an executive director running an entire business, but doing it through a nonprofit. And so it's definitely been a learning experience and something that I didn't foresee when I thought about where my career would lead me, but I'm very glad it's led me here.
Yeah, so let's get into your career a little bit. You know, when you graduated from school, where did you start working immediately after school? Was it in a private sector or did you get into public sector work?
Yeah, right when I graduated, I actually could not find a job, unfortunately. The architecture industry was still coming out of the downturn. Jobs weren't as easy to come by. And so I actually did the thing I most definitely did not want to do and moved back home for about 8 months after I graduated and had a job, the same job I had had during summer breaks and all through school at a chiropractic office. But I was lucky to find a job as an intern architect in Syracuse, New York, the following year, and worked for a firm here that did a lot of government work. And so I worked on a lot of different renovation projects, almost exclusively renovation projects of buildings across New York State. I was there for 3 or 4 years, I think, and did a lot of my experience hours there and some great colleagues there. But after about 3 years, just found myself getting really burnt out from the grind of working long hours, trying to meet deadlines, having overlapping deadlines, and decided to just kind of start looking online at other options. And that's when I came across the AmeriCorps VISTA program and that Syracuse Habitat for Humanity was looking for an AmeriCorps VISTA position.
So you applied?
Yeah. So after finding out what AmeriCorps VISTA even was, which is through the Corporation for National Community Service, and it's essentially a one-year of service where people can go and work with nonprofits in order to help them build more capacity. And most AmeriCorps members are much younger and straight out of college and do this as an interim between graduating and going on to their careers. And there are a couple of other people like me, but not a lot, who had already been in a career and decided to give back through this year of service. And so I applied for and wound up switching to Syracuse Habitat and was an AmeriCorps VISTA in Restore Development. Our Restore is a retail store where we take donations of new and used building materials and we resell them to the general public at a fraction of retail prices. And so we give back to the community through these lower prices to help people come and buy the things they need. But it's also a form of fundraising for the affiliate to help us build more houses. And so I served in that role. And when my year was up, thought, what's next? And decided to, almost on a whim, approach the then executive director and ask her if maybe she would keep me on part-time. I was at the point where I wanted to start taking my architecture licensing exams, and I knew that my architecture background lent me to skills that could help with the construction side of what we did at Habitat. Thankfully, she said yes. And so I worked for about another 2 years here, first part-time and then full-time in a made-up role of construction systems specialist, where essentially I worked on the office side of all of our construction projects. So I helped to do scheduling. I helped to coordinate subcontractors. I helped to procure materials. A lot of the administrative side of the actual house building process.
I just want to take a small step back and talk about this Habitat for Humanity store.
Yes.
That's something that is particular to the Syracuse Habitat for Humanity, or is that something that is a part of many Habitats for Humanity across the country?
It's a part of many, not all, but many Habitat for Humanity affiliates have a ReStore. And for whatever reason, in a lot of communities, they've been around for the last 15 or 20 years, but people still aren't really aware of them. And they're really a great place to find hidden treasures or just a really good deal on something you might go to a big box store for anyway. There's a lot of people who think that only contractors can go and shop at them for some reason, that they're not open to the general public, but they are. They're open to anybody, and they all have their own hours, and they're all run slightly differently and all carry slightly different items that they do or don't accept. But here in Syracuse, we're open 6 days a week in a new-to-us building we just moved to last November, and love to tell people about the ReStore because they always come in and wind up finding something that either they really, really needed or something they weren't looking for, but gives them a great idea for a new project. So we get a lot of DIY folks who are looking for furniture to refinish or items for their next DIY project or craft project that come and find things at the ReStore as well.
Yeah, that's great. I never heard of that before. So that's very interesting. So now let's get back to you. You decided to approach your executive director and ask if she would keep you on, if she would need your help. Was there a moment in that year that you were doing this through the AmeriCorps Vista that you sort of knew definitively, this is where I want to sort of forge my path down this road? Or was it, as you said, you know, like you started to realize, but was it more gradual, or was there a definitive sort of pivot moment where you were like, oh, this is it?
I wish I could say there was a definitive pivot moment, but as my husband would tell you, even last year when I debated applying for the position I'm in now, jumping ahead a little bit, I still kept going back and forth about whether, not that I didn't love the work, but about if this was where I wanted my career to go. I think it was just gradual over time. I realized how much I liked the work, how much the mission was important to me of working with low-income families to provide affordable homeownership opportunities for them. But I'm not sure I quite realized exactly how much I had to offer it all at once. It was definitely a gradual process. And even when I approached her to see if I could stay on, I still was working towards my architecture license. I was serving on the board of my local chapter of AIA. I was still staying very involved in architectural community here in Syracuse, but I knew that I wasn't ready for my time at Habitat to be up either.
And, you know, you just said that you went back and forth even with taking this new position as executive director, which we'll get to your position, because I think that it's interesting that you have somebody who was in the role already, who obviously was able to, I assume, help you in some way in getting to this point. So I'd like to know what happened to the former executive director, why she left. But before we talk about that, was your main school of thought that you would stay within volunteerism, or did you ever teeter between going back to, let's say, private sector work? Because you started out working for a private firm, even though you were doing government work. So it sort of feels like in doing government work, you might have felt a similar thing, even if you were working at a different private firm that was doing government work, but you might have felt the same pull to do work that helps people. As you mentioned, working for Habitat for Humanity through AmeriCorps VISTA did for you. So was there a tug of war in your head about going back to private, possibly doing other kinds of work, like working on schools and hospitals? And I promise that this question, you will be able to answer this question at some point. I'll stop talking. I'll stop asking it. But, you know, I just wonder where your thoughts were in that moment.
Yeah, there was definitely a tug of war because I was working so hard towards this goal I'd had since college of getting my architecture license. And so to me, that meant the next logical step was going back to private practice. And that was where I had always assumed my career path was going from the time I was graduating college. I had already taken one left turn in my time at Habitat, but I think with the intention that I would go back to the practice. And so once I was able to get my license, a few months after that, I wound up having a conversation with an architect here in Syracuse. I actually wasn't even quite ready to start looking for a position, but through a friend of mine here, found out that a local firm was looking for somebody, and they suggested I reach out. And I'm never one to say no to a conversation, probably how I wound up here today. And after talking with him, decided that this was the right opportunity for me. And so as sad as I was to leave Syracuse Habitat, I was excited to get to go work for an architecture firm as a project architect, because it felt very much like the culmination of everything I had been working towards since I had gotten to RPA.
Yeah, so that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, and that firm did much different work than the first firm I had worked at. So we did, as a small firm, we did a little bit of a lot of things, but one of the things that excited me most was the opportunity to work on some multifamily affordable housing. We also did some healthcare work, some small commercial work. There was a lot of different types of work going on, a little bit of higher education. So it was an opportunity to get a lot of experience in one place. And so that was very intriguing to me.
Yeah. That sounds like it's a good experience to have, right? For budding architects, especially budding architects who are thinking about what the next step is. You know, I think that it's good to work for a firm or a company that offers you sort of a wider variety of work so that you can actually get that experience and possibly get to a place where you can learn more about yourself and what you like and things like that. So that's really good. So then you came back then to Habitat for Humanity after that second firm experience.
Correct. Yes.
But also after you had already worked for Habitat for Humanity through AmeriCorps. So how did that go in transitioning back to Habitat for Humanity?
I had been with the architecture firm I was in for about 2.5 years when I found out that the previous executive director that I had worked with here was retiring. She had been here for over 20 years. And was nearing retirement. And I heard through the grapevine about it and didn't think much of it, except that then I kept thinking about it. It was just something that kept coming up, knowing that she'd be retiring at the end of the year. What could that look like for me? Is that something I want to consider? And one of my biggest fears was that I had worked so hard to get my architecture license. Was that really something I wanted to, quote unquote, give up to go back to work for Syracuse Habitat? And it took me a while to realize that I wasn't giving that up. I might be leaving that traditional career path, but everything I had done and all of the experience I had gained to that point all would be useful in this new role. I may not need to stamp plans or be doing code reviews necessarily in my new position, but I still would be utilizing a lot of those same skill sets and project management skills and things like that in this new role. And I knew that I still wanted to remain involved in the architectural community. And so I've stayed involved in my local chapter. And now I'm actually, as you mentioned in the introduction, I serve on the New York State Board of Directors. I serve on a couple of committees at the state level. And so I've been able to maintain that connection to the architectural community while I'm in my new role.
It's interesting that you would say that you do use a lot of the skills that you've learned along the way in your career in this new position. The reason why I find it interesting is because I think that there are many people who, during their course of their comeuppance in the architecture and even the construction industry, that do volunteer for organizations like Habitat for Humanity. And it sort of feels like, I mean, I've volunteered many moons ago for Habitat for Humanity as well. And I sort of feel like, you know, I don't know what the behind the scenes are like for, you know, something like Habitat for Humanity. Like, who comes up with the designs for the houses? How does that whole process go? And who files for permit applications? I might imagine that you do use some of those, you know, specifically architectural skills and not just sort of the broader architectural skills in your position, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, I think there's opportunities for that. And I think just having the knowledge of how all of those processes work help as well. We typically work with a local architect to help with our plans. So I'm not the one designing them, but I'm the one talking to the architect, reviewing the drawings, making sure they meet our needs. Our construction manager would typically file for the permits. But again, I'm fielding phone calls from codes with questions and things like that that previously may have just gone straight to the construction manager, who may or may not have had a lot of experience with that, depending on what their past history is in construction. And I think, above all, one of the things I think we learn best as architects is to be problem solvers. And so I think more than anything, that problem solver mentality translates really well to the nonprofit world. Habitat for Humanity's vision is a world where everyone has a decent place to live. That's not a problem that can be solved easily. And so coming at it with the perspective of what are some options of ways I can solve this problem, as opposed to getting bogged down in the details of it, and bringing the knowledge of architecture and construction industry to a nonprofit that is focused on home building, I think fits really well with where my skill set is.
How have you been enjoying the position so far? I know it's only been a few months, but how have your first 100 or so days been?
They've been great. They've been overwhelming, but incredible. I go home at night exhausted, but happy. And I think that that is proof to me that I certainly don't have it figured out yet. I may not have it figured out for the next year, but it's proof that I made the right decision, because I go home every night feeling like I can now make that difference or help people in that way that I knew I wanted to leaving high school, but I didn't know how I could do. And so bringing my skills and my career knowledge to be able to be in this position now and start solving some of the problems at this nonprofit, to be able to help more families, is very, very rewarding.
Yeah, I imagine that it's extremely rewarding. What have been some surprises about the job that you found so far?
I definitely didn't realize that I'd essentially be running at least 3, if not 4, separate businesses under the umbrella of Syracuse Habitat. So we already mentioned the ReStore. So there's a retail operation that falls under it. We build houses, so we're essentially a construction company. We still service some of the original mortgages. We no longer hold mortgages due to changes in banking regulations, but we do still accept applications and work to get the people who are part of our program. So to some degree, we work in the banking area or the financial area of that. And something I certainly did not learn in architecture school is how to read financial statements and deal with the bookkeeping side of a business. And so it's been a little bit of a crash course in the counting of profits for me these last 3 months, but it's been really fun to get to learn new things. And I think that's another thing as architects, because we're always doing continuing education and there's always so much to learn. I've always really enjoyed learning. And so I've been able to view all of these things that I might not have experience with as learning opportunities, as opposed to just something that I need to figure out. I view it as an opportunity to learn something new and improve upon it.
Yeah, sure. I think that that is another way to your earlier point, the education of the architect, and maybe I'm being a little biased here, how much the education of an architect can serve in so many different arenas, you know, because we are problem solvers, or we learn how to be problem solvers. And, you know, maybe not all of us will make it to Starchitect status, but in many ways, you know, we can use the skills that we learned in many different ways in order to champion, at the very least, our communities into better designed buildings and, you know, helping in that way. So why don't we talk a little bit about your volunteerism with the AIA? You know, you said that you were a co-president of your AIAS chapter. And did you continue to be a part of your AIA in Pennsylvania when you went back home for a little bit? Or did you start again once you made it back to, or made it to Syracuse?
Yeah, I started again when I made it to Syracuse. And I was lucky to have a coworker who was serving on the local board who took me under her wing, both at work and then also helping me to get involved in AIA. And she introduced me to a lot of people in the Syracuse community, and I'm very grateful for that. And she slowly but surely knew how to get me to volunteer more and more. She'd bring me to events, and then she'd ask me to help with events. And then she'd say, oh, I can't make this happy hour. Could you host it? And then one thing led to another, and I wound up taking her position as the community director on our local board.
It sounds like a lot like many other AIA stories where you sort of get roped into, you know, doing a little bit more and then a little bit more until you become president. Did you sort of make your path with the idea that you would like to serve the chapter in a particular way, or was it something that just sort of happened again along the path, like so many other stories?
I think it sort of happened along the path. I certainly didn't set out to make my path end in the presidency, but the longer I was involved, the more I saw opportunities for improvement or things the chapter could be doing. And the age old, why doesn't somebody else do that? Oh, I am somebody, maybe I could do that. And so I wasn't necessarily, you know, kind of pushed into it, but I volunteered myself saying, well, I think I would be able to take that on. And so I agreed to run for president and served as our president here in Central New York. It's a 3-year term, so it's president-elect, president, and past president. So I knew at that point, about 3 years into my AIA time on the board, that I was signing up for at least another 3 years, which has now turned into moving on to the state board as well.
Yeah. And, you know, as president, were there certain things that you knew going into the presidency that you wanted to maybe initiate within the chapter, or, you know, sort of bolster some programs that were already there? And what were some of the things that you might have done to engage other membership, especially younger membership that were in your position when you first started out within the chapter? What were some of the things that you did?
Yeah, I had great hopes for what my presidency would be. Unfortunately, my presidency was in the year 2020. So I had about 2.5 months of it go by before all of my plans were blown to bits, but I really wanted to provide as much value to our local members as I could and to reinforce to them the value of their membership at the state and at the national level, because a lot of people would ask me, well, why should I be a member? And I always struggled with that question because I can't answer that for them. I could tell them why I'm a member and why I've stayed a member, whether I am working in an architecture firm or working in a nonprofit. I maintain my AIA membership because it's very important to me to stay connected to the architectural community, to give back through volunteering. And it's been the best way for me to network and meet other people. And there's many people I now call friends who I only met through different AIA events. And so to me, that networking and knowledge sharing of the members of AIA is one of the most important points.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that that's one of the, again, maybe I'm a little biased, but that's one of the best reasons to go into leadership of any organization, is that you want to provide value and that you want to provide something for everybody else that you felt like maybe you received, or even sometimes maybe you feel like you lacked, you know, something. And I think that mentality of giving back and being able to be of service to others, it definitely seems to, you know, weave through your entire career.
Absolutely. Once I took this new position, I think I was about a month in, and I went home one night and realized my entire life is a nonprofit or volunteering right now. I work for one, I volunteer on two boards, and that pretty much sums up my time at the moment. But each time I'm asked if I'll join a new committee or be part of this meeting or join a podcast for AIA New York State, if at all possible, I always try to say yes, because I hope that I have some value to add. I hope that I have something to add to the conversation. And I always get something out of it as well. I get to meet somebody new, or I get an opportunity I wouldn't have had. And so it's certainly not all completely selfless. I think there's a lot of good that individuals can get themselves through the volunteering process. And I've always found that important in my volunteering, is I also need to get joy out of it or feel like I'm able to make an impact.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it shows, because you are, not only are you still on the board of directors at Central New York, but you also sit on the board of directors for AI in New York State. You're on the budget and finance committee. You're doing this executive director job and getting your bearings with that. And you recently got married to the person who you met years ago in college. So how are you finding balancing all that you do for right now, especially as here in New York City, we're a little bit maybe slower than other areas in getting back into the office full time and getting back to business as usual. But I imagine in Syracuse, you know, it's a little bit, you're a little bit ahead of us in that way. So how are you finding balancing newlywed life, new job life, as well as, you know, the positions that you hold still within the AIA world?
It's definitely a balancing act, and I won't say that I've got it figured out. I think one thing that's really important to talk about in the architecture profession in general, and I hear more and more about, especially with emerging professionals, is that need for self-care and that need to find that balance. And I think it's really important to keep having those conversations. I mean, the thing that brought me to Syracuse Habitat in the first place was that I was feeling really burnt out because I didn't have those boundaries in place. A couple things for me, I really focus on a morning and a nighttime routine. I meditate in the morning before I start my day to make sure I've got some quiet time to myself, that I am not racing through thinking about the 37,000 things I have to get accomplished that day. And I try to take some quiet time at night before bed as well. Those routines really help me to have at least 2 points in the day every day where I know what to expect, because with all of my volunteering and my new role as executive director, I can't guarantee what any one day will look like. And so finding those points where I can control my day has been really important. I am occasionally learning to say no, to not overcommit myself, but that's not something I've quite gotten a handle on yet because, as I said, I really like to take on new opportunities where I can, but recognizing maybe where I can be of the most use to not overextend myself is something I've been working on. But then again, we have a contractor coming the end of this week to re-side our entire house. So I apparently just really like to have that organized chaos going on around me.
Maybe it's more organized than it is chaos, but I can definitely see that you like being active, let's say.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I was just wondering, as you were responding to that, I have to ask whether or not you have felt like being a woman in the industry has ever sort of put you in a position where you might get, let's say, pigeonholed into doing certain things. I ask because I think that the inability to say no is something that is very much attributed to women. And sometimes we tend to not feel like we can say no, you know, especially when it comes down to career and forging ahead, forging our own path within a career that is predominantly male oriented. So how have you found that your being a woman has factored into your career and your career path so far?
Yeah, I definitely have seen that at different points throughout my career. And thankfully, there's never been any major incidents that have, you know, really turned me off to anything. But I think it is an important conversation to have about that feeling of not being able to say no, or I've certainly struggled at certain points with that feeling of imposter syndrome that I always wonder, is that more prone in women than in men to feel like maybe I don't belong at that table, or maybe I know my title is AIA now, but do I really have the capabilities to be an architect? And how do I get over that when it seems like my male colleagues all just have the comfort level or the confidence to move forward with that? But I think the thing that stands out most to me is actually that there was a time early in my career where I've always been a person who's willing to introduce myself and talk to just about anybody in a room. And I found myself at a meeting not introducing myself because I had lost that confidence somehow that I was just as capable or just as able to speak up in a room full of other people as any of my male colleagues. But sometimes being the only woman in a room makes you stop and wonder about it. Even just this morning, I spoke at a meeting of the Masonry Contractors Association here, and there was one other woman in the room, and she was a safety consultant also speaking at the meeting. And so it's one of those things where day to day you don't think about it, and then all of a sudden you'll be in a situation where you look around and you say, I'm the only woman in the room. How is this still happening?
Yeah. What kind of advice would you give to especially younger women just starting out in the field? And I think that especially in 2022, when, again, we're coming out of COVID, hopefully, and, you know, people are starting their careers, you know, like what are some sort of ways that you would give advice to younger women in combating that sort of thought process?
I think that continuous process of personal development is really important. I love to read, and so I read a lot of personal development and professional development books, listen to audiobooks, listen to other podcasts. And I think that's been really helpful to me because it reminds me that I'm not alone. I'm not the only one struggling with these feelings. You know, hearing professionals talk about these different things or giving tips or techniques to dealing with imposter syndrome is helpful. But I also think finding your community is really important. And so whether that's in your local AIA, or if you have an emerging professionals group, a firm you work for, if you work for a bigger firm, or even just finding a club sport or something else you enjoy participating in, having a community around you that can support you when times get tough is really, really important. And that's one of the reasons I love being part of the AIA, is even though none of the people I know here in Syracuse have my exact career path, everyone's got their own stories and they've all been through some of the same struggles. And so you can learn from them without having to make the same mistakes they made, or just hear from them that whatever trouble you're facing, they've already overcome, so that you know it's possible. So I think finding that community early on in your career, even if it's just one coworker who you can confide in when you have an issue and you feel like you're about to ask a stupid question. There are no stupid questions, and don't let people prevent you from asking those questions, because to me, asking those questions shows you want to learn, and that's the only way we can improve.
That's great. Yeah, I think that it's so important, finding your community, finding where you fit in the best within your local surroundings. That is so important, as you spoke about a little earlier, just in maintaining your mental health, you know, and overall well-being. It is such an important thing, and oftentimes maybe a little bit overlooked. So, you know, it's an important thing to really work at finding that community where you feel like you definitely fit in and these are your people. So one last question for you before we get into just our final quick fire round. Don't be nervous. I wonder, knowing what you know now about your career as, you know, I guess we can still call it an alternate path, even though I don't think that it's so alternate. As we discussed, you know, you're using your skills that you've learned along the way in order to really benefit the local Syracuse community. But knowing what you know now, would you, let's say, give yourself the advice to do things exactly as you did them? And is that something that you do say to younger people that you speak to nowadays? Like, you know, there are alternate things that you can do, and it's not so important to focus on, let's say, one aspect, but to think about it broader. Is that something that you would tell yourself again, to do things exactly the way that you do? And is this something that you would tell other people coming up in the profession?
Yeah, I think if I could tell my younger self, I don't know that I would have taken a different path, but I think I would have told myself not to worry so much about it, that a lot of my worries or concerns sometimes came around, well, what will other people think? Because this is not the traditional architecture path. And so will I be judged for that in future job interviews, or what might others think of that? And so I think I just give my younger self permission to follow my path, because clearly, knowing what I know now, it's going to bring me to a really good place. And I think I try to tell other emerging professionals that it really is important to follow their passions, even if that doesn't lead them exactly where they thought they might be going. And that as long as they're using their skills in a way that feels genuine and authentic to them, that that's what's important. Because I think we give our best selves when we can use our skills in a very genuine way and feel like we are able to make a difference in whatever we're doing, whether that's at work or in volunteering or at home with our families, to just be able to follow their passions and maybe not place so much emphasis on the title or the achievement or the milestone in their careers, because you never know where your career might take you. And I certainly have no idea where I might be 15 years from now, but I am hopeful that it'll be in a great place, because I keep allowing myself to make these decisions, to follow my instincts and see where the path takes me.
I have a feeling that we'll find you still doing good for your community and for other people if your career path so far is any indication. So thank you very much for talking to us a little bit about your entire career path today.
Thank you.
So before we leave, I'd like to ask you a few questions. Like I said, they're sort of quick fire questions, all in good fun, but just so that we can know a little bit more about you. Personally, we'll start off with pancakes or waffles. This is the most important question.
Pancakes.
Pancakes. Okay. Cake or pie?
Cookie cake.
Cookie cake.
That's what I had at my wedding, cookie cake.
Is there a particular kind of cookie? Like, I imagine you won't have an oatmeal cookie cake.
No, chocolate chip cookie cake with layers of frosting between. That was my wedding cake. The first time the bakery here had done a cookie cake wedding cake, but it turned out fabulous.
Yeah, that's interesting. You should definitely share pictures. So what's your go-to karaoke song?
I have not been to karaoke in forever, but I'll tell you what it's not. Never sing American Pie at karaoke. That song is like 7.5 minutes long. Lesson learned. I will never do that again.
But unless you really can rock it, though.
No.
Okay, mental note. We'll take that under advisement. Do you find horoscopes BS or fascinating?
Somewhere in between. Find them fascinating, but I don't keep too much stock by them.
Yeah. Pineapple or no pineapple on your pizza? I was lying before. This is actually the most important question.
And I'm going to get judged so much, but I like pineapple on pizza.
Okay, you know, so do I. So don't feel so alone in that.
Good.
Is it okay to put ketchup on your eggs?
I do.
Sometimes you need a little extra. Now, is a hot dog a sandwich?
I'm going with yes.
Yeah. I mean, two pieces of bread, right?
Mm-hmm.
Something in between.
It makes sense. You put toppings on it.
Exactly. Ketchup, mustard, relish, other toppings, you know. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it qualifies. So do you say pecan or pecan?
Pecan.
Pecan. Okay. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today, Sarah. It's been a pleasure getting to know you a little bit more. And for those of you that want to read a little bit more about Sarah Bruce's story, you can check out AIA New York State's quarterly publication, which is found on the AIA New York State website. You can see an article written by Sarah, where she explains a little bit more, and there are pictures. So that makes it a little bit different than hearing her story on the podcast. So thank you again, Sarah, for being with us today. It's been a pleasure, and I hope that we speak with you again.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you. It's been great getting to talk to you and answer your questions. And thank you to AIA New York State for all the wonderful work they do.
Thank you. See you next time.